In Conversation with Terry Shepard, award-winning broadcaster, narrator, and author. A deep dive into the writer's craft with the artists and support systems who create the stories we love.
Thanks, Lisa. Richard Meredith is a Michigan native and a U.S. Navy veteran with a background in marine science and wildlife biology. He burst onto the scene in 2015 with Skydance, an adventure thriller set in the Amazon. Then came The Crow's Nest, which he describes as the mutant spawn of savages and Das Boot. His latest is Maskarovka, The Russian Science of Deception, a novel that Kirkus Reviews calls a taut, timely, terrific thriller. Rick joins us from his home in Sacramento, California, with the 411 on Maskarovka.
I found the whole situation very interesting when I was reading this. I thought about four or five articles, and this had to be about 2014, about how Russian money going through a couple of foundations were using their money to pay for anti-fracking causes in the U.S. And then when I started digging a little deeper, it made perfect sense because we were at a renaissance in the oil industry. We were just producing so much natural gas and oil, we were going to start exporting like crazy. And the Russian economy, 70% of it is based on their output to Western Europe and Eastern Europe. They do not want any competition at all. So the Russians are funding U.S. green groups to shut down our petroleum, so they're much more valued. I thought, how clever. How deceptive.
Steve Nguyen, your protagonist, is a very complicated guy. But one of the most interesting characters that I enjoyed in the book was his sister, Tina.
She's a little fireball. She's an attorney with a specialization in feral law. And no one wants to mess with her. And she's tenacious. And she's also Steve's wingman. Steve suffers from social anxiety disorder, which kind of kicked him out of law school because anytime he was called on, he'd go into a panic attack and just couldn't do it. But then he worked on mechanisms that he could get into the police force. And what they were looking for when they did the psychological testing was sociopathy and psychopathy. And they weren't really worried about social anxiety. And he was able to mask his symptoms so well because she taught him how to do it. So she's been taking care of him since she was 12 years old. Every time they go to a family outing, she's by his side. She's his wingman or wingwoman. And when he gets into a predicament, he has to go to a trial and speak with evidence. She preps him beforehand, just don't vary from this. So she's taking care of him. And she actually has a friend of hers who's a psychologist, gives him into treatment. But he doesn't want anyone to know about the treatment because he doesn't go to the police psychologist because, and he doesn't want to take meds because as soon as he's on witness stand, they're going to say, oh, this guy's crazy. You can't trust his judgment on that. So that's, and it, the way she takes care of him, and then she's very astute at figuring things out. So yeah, when he can't figure it out, she's there.
Rick Meredith is our guest. He's on the web at richardwmeredith.com. And we're in conversation about his newest thriller, Maskarovka, The Russian Science of Deception. Rick, you brought some professional experience to the research for Skydance and The Crow's Nest. How did you research Maskarovka?
There was a lot of things out there. I knew a lot about, I've worked in tangentially in the petroleum industry doing environmental work. So I knew a little bit about fracking and a lot of podcasts, a lot of blog sites, a lot of internet reading. In a few books here and there, but just scanning. So I got it that way, but most of it's imagination, putting it together. I like doing a setting and then researching that setting, like a palace on the Black Sea. What the czars and the czarinas have there? How did it look? And then I just use my imagination from there. And then that's the kind of stuff I like to do the research on.
Characters, plot, or both? What do your readers prefer?
People come back for the characters. They don't come back for the plot. More than a few people have told me Tina's their person. And in my latest one that I'm working on, she's in peril. So he rescues her for a change. So this is going to be a little bit more fun. And in a second book called Double Cross of Bridget, my protagonist in this one, the secondary character, is this woman who's a hard hat diver, a commercial diver, and she's excavating this pipeline in the Sacramento Delta, and she comes up, finds this box, hoisted to the barge, and it's a strong box that was lost during the gold rush. And they open it up, and they find a series of letters and a map to a gold mine. And the gold mine is now, though, inundated by about 200 feet of water in a reservoir that was built since then in the foothills of California. But there's the story is really about a contemporary murder that occurs in San Francisco, and then a couple of murders that happened during the gold rush. And this map is the clue to putting them both together.
How do you build interesting characters?
That's a good question. I think you look at people you admire or traits in people that you admire. I think it's got to be believable. They've got to have the good traits. They've got to have the bad traits. There's got to be a certain ambiguity to the character. But it's got to be relatable. You can either like them or dislike them, but you relate to them in some way. So I'm always looking at what if you're watching movies, you're watching TV, or at the airport, or wherever you're watching. Why are you attracted to that personality type or that person? That's what I try to draw on. And if it works, I'm happy.
We're in conversation with Richard Meredith, and his latest is Maskirovka, The Russian Science of Deception. He's online at richardwmeredith.com. We've talked about protagonists, Rick. What about good antagonists?
It's too easy to make it's too easy to make them black and white. I don't like that because I like it with situations where your protagonist, your antagonist, there's only one little change in their life that would have kicked them over one side or the other. So they got to be relatable both in the story. And in Maskirovka, Sergov, the Russian, he's looking out for his motherland. His whole family, everything he's looking for, that's what he's looking after. He wants to make sure they survive. And he'll do anything he can to make that happen. It just so happens that he's screwing this up. That's something else I'm doing it.
Why write?
Boy, isn't that a great question? You have to do it. It's compelling. You're compelled. You just have to do it. I've told you 1,000 times I'm a lazy writer. It's really hard for me to get up and come to the keyboard. And I've said this over and over again. Writing is the hardest thing to start, the easiest thing to quit, but it's the most fun in between.
How do you define success?
I think that getting good reviews and getting an award, to me, that's really, I'm never going to make a living doing this. I don't expect to, but I like doing it, and accolades go a long way. I'm not targeting for that, but if they happen, I'm very happy because I'm going to write regardless of whether they like it or not. But so be it if they do.
Rejection comes with the territory when you're an author, especially if you're trying to get published traditionally. How do you cope with it?
I get more rejections now than I did in high school, but they're much more pleasant. You talk to agents or in a candid moment, and it is a very impersonal thing. It's not so much you don't do good work. It's just that's not selling now. I've had a situation where I said, I really like this, but I have another writer that is on this. I can't do both of you at the same time if it's just the same subject matter. Or are there demographics involved? Is that something that's selling at this point? So there's all kinds of excuses. And I think for an agent, the easiest thing for them to do is to reject. And if you can't get them in the first couple of pages, actually first couple of sentences, you're done. And my strategy has always been, first I'm going to try to go through the agent route. Then that doesn't work. I'll go small publisher. And if I can't do a small publisher, then I'm going to go independent. There's an avenue out there. It's just much more difficult the further away you get from the big publishing. I can remember my failures much better than I can remember my successes. And I'm actually going to do write a blog on it. I'm not sure exactly. I haven't got it all structured yet, but I'm thinking of all the things I can remember where I totally bomb. And the first one that comes to mind was, we were just talking about being left-handed, okay? I'm on the junior varsity baseball team, And I had never faced a left-hand curveball pitcher in my life. And they're always right-hand curveball pitchers. I see it coming in. I can handle it. So I'm playing against Flint Central. They're junior varsity. And Ron Pruitt, who became a pro player, he was a catcher. We played against him for a long time. He said, this guy's going to throw straight down the middle. So the guy throws me curveballs. I struck out four times. I just could not. I think I fouled one or two off. I thought, there's always basketball. I remember that one. There was another one. I was on the varsity basketball team at the Flint Junior College, which is now Mott College. But I was like the 15th man on a 12-man squad because they needed the guys in practice. So I was actually much more like a tackling dummy for the first string. And I think I got into two games at the last 20 seconds or so, how they always did that. And I had, for the entire season, I had a total of 1 point. And I could have had two, but I missed the second free throw. So I think it was smart that I went into something in science and writing instead of sports.
Rick Meredith is our guest. RichardWMeredith.com is his website. We've kind of dipped into the philosophical side of life and writing. What's the secret to maintaining a positive attitude about things?
Look at all the good stuff. You just think of the people that are suffering right now in Ukraine or Israel. Jeez, we've got it so good. And the little stuff that we have to put up with is nothing. Nothing. I think what my parents had to go through, like grandparents, Depression, World War II, all that. And we're living actually in a golden age, maybe coming to an end, but we lived in some of the best times ever. And I think that's what you have to look at. Could be so much worse. We get people to get sick. Oh, you know, went to my 50th high school reunion that one October, and they put out a PDF of our dearly beloved that are no longer with us. And that was very sober. I go back to Flint probably once a year at least, and I travel with a group of people that I've known since grade school, and we're going to be vacationing with some over in January with some grade school friends. And it's just, there's lifelong friends. That's the way it is. And it's interesting because some have become very successful, others have not, but it doesn't matter because you're all at the same level that you were in high school. Nothing changed.
Richard Meredith is the author of three excellent books, Skydance, The Crow's Nest, and his latest, Maskarovka, The Russian Science of Deception. It's getting rave reviews and is a timely tale in an era where our premier adversary is actually doing many of the things you'll read about in Rick's book. You can find it wherever great books are sold. Learn more about this gifted author at RichardWMeredith.com. Rick, thanks for joining us in conversation.
Oh, I appreciate doing it. That's fun. Yeah, let's do it again.
In Conversation with Terry Shepherd is a copyrighted presentation. All rights reserved. I'm Lisa Davis. Join Terry Shepherd next time in Conversation.